there be something of resolution? I also have another of this.
Two
cables.
This one used to work.
Yeah, well, that works better. Yes, this yes, that one was a new one.
It's there.
Something like this, huh? Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, thank you. to the right? Oh yeah, yeah, okay. But then I yeah, okay then. Oh, there I have to stand. Yeah, somewhat.
Everybody in the room. Our director is giving final instructions. Hello everybody in the room. Hello everybody online. It's my great pleasure to introduce to you Zeno Geretz. Zeno and me work for together more than 15 years.
Yes.
Eventually. It's his first time in Norway. And I'm very happy that he's going to talk to you today about first Netherlands Forensics Institute, which is the leading forensics institute in Europe, setting the standards on new technology, educating a lot of other forensics institutes, sharing their knowledge, as for example the high-tech crime unit at Kripos has been built according to the model from the high-tech crime unit Netherlands Forensic Institute about up to 2007. So now Forensic Institute has been taking over also leadership for analyzing a huge amount of data in forensic casework, comes up with a first prototype. Zeno is going to present us parts of it. And gives us direction on where there is synergies and joint interest for cooperation. Who is Seino? In the scene, Seino is, I say, a dinosaur, one of the pioneers setting up high-tech crime units, working with machine learning pattern recognition with a PhD from University of Amsterdam many years back. He is now head of research at NFI, taking care for digital forensics and biometrics. Some of you may have known Seino also that he had one of the biggest collections of mobile phones, setting the standards in middle of the 2000s. And we are very happy that Seino has now also an adjunct position at University of Amsterdam, where he's heading the research group on forensic data science. More details coming now. Where should go, as we say in Norway.
Okay.
And enjoy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your introduction, and thank you very much for having me here. I will talk in detail about some forensic challenges in big data analysis, but I also will talk somewhat about the Netherlands Forensic Institute and some fields of collaboration. So I will go into some of these subjects. So short introduction to NFI, something about embedded systems, something about camera identifications and video, so large amounts of data, social networks, and some summary. On the NFI, we have 550 employees currently, a budget of 70 million euros. And we have nearly all forensic disciplines except psychiatry and some smaller disciplines we also don't have, but 40 different fields of expertise as such. And we are since 7025 accredited. One of the special areas we also now invest in is cyber, is of course also nuclear and biological investigations after an incident happens. Within the digital department, we have several fields of expertise, and one is the embedded systems, so all kinds of electronic devices, phones, so a large collection of phones, as was already mentioned by Catherine. So we try to buy also all phones, so that if we have receive a phone for a case, in that we already have this in file, and that we can do a chip off if that's necessary. And of course, lots of other electronic devices like cars, like medical devices. So people that have hacked insulin pumps, or claimed that their insulin pump is hacked, or after they died, and there are some questions on that. Then this might also be one of the things that will be investigated. So since every device or nearly every device has some chips in it, it's a wide field of investigation. We also, as mentioned, traffic and industrial accidents. We also examine, so car electronics is one of those things that is of interest. Lots of data you can find there. Also log files in the GPS locations, but also lots of other things like the airbag control, and which might be of interest after an accident happened. Of course, also audio, speech, and biometric devices is something we investigate. So also if there is a biometric device that's tampered with. So for instance, in Schiphol Airport, you might have this iris recognition. And sometimes there is a question, not with the Schiphol Airport, I must say, but has there been tampered with the biometric system? Of course, lots of image analysis and 3D modeling. What can you determine from a certain image, and how can you analyze it? It's often quite time-consuming, this kind of work. So I hope in the future that we can have more automatic kind of methods to analyze those. But that's still not true currently. But now I will go to the real thing, the digital part. So I will go to somewhat in the cyber forensics and some challenges and opportunities and some of our work in this. Currently, the top three kinds of cases is child abuse, murder and fraud. And top three types of analysis is mobile phone, hard drives, or and then data analysis, or any kind of data that's given to the NFI. Cybercrime cases we see sometimes, but not that much. And in the past we saw, of course, lots of skimming cases, but they are finished now because the banking system, the banking cards have switched to the chip cards, and so we see some fraud there, but that's not not very much currently. And we see, of course, lots of research on a different field, so this is also something where we help with and where we also investigate with. But cybercrime cases can be quite challenging to solve, since the link to the suspect is often quite difficult, and you need lots of time for analysis for this. So we focus on the digital traces, on data and metadata, and we will look to further issues there. So if we focus on data, we see we try to extract the data, we try to make the data readable, organize the data, and interpret the data. Interpretation is, of course, for the forensic lab, that's one of the most important things. What can you conclude from those the data as such? So you should have a model, and we like to have a Bayesian approach in this, but in digital we are still searching for giving a good Bayesian conclusion on digital evidence as such. Police will do 97% of the work, because they will handle the data, and we will only get the complicated cases as such. So we also developed some in-house things, like the chip forensics memory toolkit, that's for mobile phones. If they are damaged, then we will take off the chip, and we have developed this also for international use. Others can also use it, and to extract chips and read out the memories as such. Also, this is also something we sometimes do, but that's also really much more challenging. That's investigating chips with electron microscope. Something you will only do if it's really an important case, because this is a very time-consuming part. And then you might read out, you might want to modify a chip that encryption is circumvented. Or you might look to a certain memory areas of the chip. For that we use a dual beam electron microscope, but also within EMFC, the European Network of Forensic Science Institute, we had a challenge for investigating this kind of work, and there are several labs in the world that do these kind of examinations. But now we are going to into the big data, because of course on a chip it's small data often, but the chips are also getting larger and larger. So we have many formats, old and new formats, and if we see a new format coming in, for instance a new communication style format, we will have a tool and library development, and we will do a lot of reverse engineering on that if the manufacturer does not give us the specification of the data. So we'll have we built many libraries ourselves. Why don't we use the commercial libraries? Because we want to test if they are really working, and so we want to have second piece of software to check if this is if you really analyze all the amount of data that's available. So we see also within the lab that we do lots of trace analysis. Trace analysis is the expertise to conserve, detect, repair, undelete, decrypt, find, structure and interpret the data and traces on any case related to digital medium. This is something, this is the heart of the forensics. This is something that's often done within the lab if the commercial tools cannot handle it. If we look to standard cases, we see retrieving data from password protected, encrypted, wet or otherwise damaged the hard drives or USB sticks. So this is the kind of work that comes in. You might have a burned phone or something like that. So typically we now see that some criminals are aware that there is lots of data on their phone. So we had a criminal that used a saw to damage his phone, but then still he didn't damage the chip, so we also could take off the chip in that case. But that's just a nice example that you really have to hurt the chip in some way. Several years ago a very big child pornography case where there was a collection of more than 50 million images of child pornography. It was someone that also produced that child pornography. He worked at a child care part and he abused the children there. And this was a very big case. So there we started to have our software, a software that was in a network where several people could search on the software Giraffe to analyze this data. So we had this problem of large amounts of heterogeneous data in large cases, like the child pornography cases, but also in some hacking cases, some botnet cases. We also used this system. And as a matter of fact, the police has to use its system. I mean, they can directly access the system, so that is also the advantage of it. The data will be uploaded to the system, and the technical examiner of the police can directly search through the data. That system had only 4 terabytes an hour, so that was quite slow, and it was meant to have a new case available within 24 hours, but it was not completely forensically correctly programmed, so we had to go further. Of course, you know, the digital world, we have a rapid, short development cycle, so we should, if there's a new protocol on the market, you should reverse engineer it very fast. For instance, if WhatsApp certainly decides to change their protocols, then you should be aware of that and should modify your database as such. And we see, of course, increasing streaming data volumes, lots of video, bandwidth that's growing very much. And yes, it's said that 92% of the data was created in the past 2 years, and this might continue for a while. And we see, of course, lots of falling prices of hardware and devices, so big data is really an issue. So the challenge is within the big data analysis is if you have approximately 8 terabytes per investigation, that's on average per case, to have it fast indexed, possibly within 24 hours. And since all investigations, nearly all investigations, also the murders, having the digital components, it appeared to work to concentrate this and to put this in a central system in the Netherlands. And we also see that digital expertise is quite expensive. I mean, there are not too many digital experts, so you would like to put them on work that is special and not on standard cases. So, yes, often we have to explain this in court, what does it mean, 8 terabytes? And then, because sometimes some judges might say, okay, can you print it or can you visualize it? But that's something they are more aware of now. So we see all kinds of gadgets, and of course the Internet of Things, 3D printers, and all kinds of Google Glasses. Or but then it's if you investigate Google Glass, for instance, it might be that the next day they stop the glasses. So we prefer to look to the higher level of investigation of these things in research than doing research on one kind of Google Glass or something like that. We see many new products coming in, and of course they are brought to the lab sometimes for investigation. And how do we identify the relevant digital traces? So here we have smart automation of our data factories, and of course you would like to distribute the data as fast as possible to the police. That's yes, in the Netherlands, maybe 200 kilometers away. I mean, that's in the Netherlands. So this is something I don't have to explain, but of course, the digital traces, they have to be interpreted, and that's where our data collections come in. And the difficulty here is undocumented storage formats, deleted files, files that are partly overwritten, and encryption is also one of those issues that we see. So if we look into data analysis at the NFI, if we have the specifications, we will reverse engineer it and carve the data. We will have forensic libraries. So we will have a forensic library of file systems, file formats, traces for forensic library, and RAM memory. RAM memory is also quite important, especially for live systems, because you might find passwords in them or other traces of wireless networks or locations. And we'll have a data model to create a trace index and investigate it using a user interface or an API, so that you can also connect to other software packages. So here we see the conventional digital investigation. It typically took several months with the standalone systems, where you had to first to index all the data from the case, and then you had the technical investigator in between the analyst and the technical investigator. And now with Xiraf, we had several weeks. So there, it was 1 terabyte, but in 24 hours, but of course, in the meantime, it gets faster. And then you skip the technical investigator in some way. And we see several experiences, especially in child pornography cases, there are now over 600 cases done on this system, and it's a large often cybercrime, fraud, drugs, holdups, murders, and it are often large-scale investigations, but also some small-scale investigation as such. So we went further, because we would like to improve the search to some hours. So there we have the 1 terabyte per 20 minutes, but that's also old, because now it can also be indexed faster. I mean that's something you will always see, that things will improve somewhat. And there we have several aspects. So we'll have the infrastructure balancing that's more optimized than in the old system. Seamless integration of the security. So we did security by design, but we also took care about the forensic aspects by design, so logging of all information. Unlimited but that's quote-unquote scalability, and it should be also transparent. So we used as much as we could open source parts in the system. Hansken, that is the name of the system. And this works now actually in Netherlands, so it appears to work quite well and quite fast. The security is also so we have all aspects like privacy, so that you cannot, even the system administrator cannot view the contents of cases, because that's one of the things that you don't want to happen, that system administrators can access everything, but in our system only the examiner can access their data and not anyone else. So that's, that took lots of effort in this system, and we used just standard components like Hadoop and other systems, but we try to integrate it all in a very secure system that's forensically correct. So we have this system, a secure big data investigation platform with a dynamic privacy alignment. And on top of that, we'll have several tools, like our intelligent data analysis tools or some other plugins that we can link to. And so that's how Hansken is built off now. So in conclusion, you will see conventionally it could cost throughput of months, and with Giraffe some weeks, and now we see with Hansken that it has a throughput of hours. So this is one of the things that we investigate, of course. But within digital forensics, we see also other things, and I also know that here there's a lot of research on the cloud computing. So that's also something we are investigating further in. But there you also have some issues with laws that you are not that you need to have permission, of course, to enter a system in another country, depending on the laws. So what's the challenge with cloud systems? In theory, as a forensic scientist, people want to go to the disk cabinet of the cloud system, but where is it? So it might be in several countries if you go to Google or to Microsoft, and then do it in a forensic proper way with permission. But nowadays you see that you will have more tools available, also commercial tools to read out cloud systems, and also virtual computing systems like in Amazon. You might also have an easy way to make a copy of their system, unless people use very high encryption standards or other methods that makes it more complicated. But sometimes it's even easier to have a copy of a cloud system than of a normal system. Things we also investigate is, of course, locations of mobile phones. Of course, you might have your GPS on your system, but also the cell site analysis is one of the things that we investigate. Cell site in forensic science is getting more complicated because of UMTS, because there you will have the shrinking and the expanding site, so you should have more information about this to do a forensic analysis as such. And of course, GPS data is also something that's of importance, and that will also be processed within this Hansken system with different apps you might have. They also store location data, but also the system itself logs your data. And sometimes also with GPS systems in cars, you will see that also erased data can be restored from the systems, so that you can also find where someone was at a given time. But of course, with Google, in the past they had Google Latitude, where you could really track a person as such if they would turn this on. And still, this kind of tracking software is still available. So That's something that also gives some information about where someone was at a given time. But of course, then you should also enter the cloud system as such. In the Netherlands, we can do a lawful internet interception, so we also try to combine this within the Hansken system. Lawful internet interception is only done by court order, so there are only a few cases where that's done, because it's quite expensive to do internet interception of someone's phone or someone's ADSL or cable network. And it always takes lots of data. I mean, typically if you wiretap someone's, that might take lots of data because of the high speeds of the internet. So one issue, of course, you have with the interpretation of data is that the data itself is not self-explaining. So we should have a scenario analysis. A timeline analysis is something we do. That's something you can do automatically. But a scenario analysis, you really have to talk to the to communicate what's really necessary in this case. Geographical models we will have, and of course analysis of multimedia, so images, video, and audio. And author recognition is also something we are interested in. So that's one of those things where you might have the pattern of typing, and then we have our department of biometrics and data and digital technology that come together. So we might use things of both fields. And that's also where we have also a special department within our group, and that's the intelligent data analysis for the big data, of course. Where we try to find patterns in data and do some data mining, text mining, also in social networks. Of course, the data should be handed to the... so we are not allowed to investigate social networks as such, but only with a research question or a question that's asked by a judge or a prosecutor. And there we see also the large-scale identity analysis, or the large-scale identifiers that you would like to have. As said, we had these kind of challenges. Data is damaged, password protected, encrypted or deleted, and data is often volatile. I mean, live systems like in the child pornography case, this case... often you have to prevent that someone turns off the system, because otherwise you need to crack the system and to find passwords from that. So nowadays we see also much live investigation that's done, and it makes it even more complicated to do it in a forensic correct way, because your system will be altered if you are investigating it. And we will always focus on chips or on system as such, because there are too many different mobile phones and electronic devices that are developed. So it's hard to have a collection of mobile phones. We'll have, but we'll not have of all car electronics or any other kind of cameras or that kind of collections. We'll not have a large collection of those. We'll just do that case by case. So here you see again the embedded systems, all kinds of embedded systems that may be analyzed at the lab. Also pacemakers are sometimes brought in. They also have some good log files, of course, what happened that, and perhaps you might determine the time of death of a person if they use a pacemaker or another medical device. This is also the kind of things that we get in burnt smartphones, and there we also will try to repair and extract the data from the chips. In the past, we did also some, but this is very old, I must say. We had cracking of of passwords. We did it in the past with, but then it was quite easy. We also had in the past this kind of device, a robot that tries different passwords, but that's not feasible anymore. So now you need to have more intelligent ways to crack those devices. You see lots of commercial products. These are not an unlimited list, but they are often used, at least in the Netherlands. So that's something we will not. If there is a commercial product, we will not investigate our own methods. So we will only use new methods and develop new methods as such, because time is limited. As said, physical chip removal, that's something where we also have this method for, and we'll also try to repair broken chips. So we see lots of different sources coming in, also SCADA data, so from industrial networks. So sometimes there might be a claim that a certain SCADA or industrial network has been hacked. So this is also a growing field of expertise, and all kinds of solid state devices. So currently we'll do this kind of analysis and interpretation of results. We will try to make a Bayesian conclusion out of it. The findings of the investigation are about as likely that hypothesis 1 is correct and hypothesis 2 is correct, for instance. And that's something we are working on to make it also with big data, because there it gets even more complicated to make a Bayesian framework of. There we try to make a new method to develop something new out of that. I will skip this one, because here we have also case examples. This was a while ago, so you can see it from the mobile phone that was used. That was with a bomb at the IKEA in Amsterdam, that someone tried to explode a bomb at the IKEA with a mobile phone. It's often seen that people will use a device like a mobile phone to call it, and then the bomb will explode. But in this case, we could find the erased data of the SIM card in that time, and then we could restore where the person was and the suspect was found. So, as said, silicon forensics is with the electron microscope, and that's something which is the next step. And especially with chips currently, they are getting multi-layered, so you should also do something with a multi-layered chip, and that gets even more complicated to work on, but still not, you can still work on that. Digital video, of course, you might have a video that's not playable, so not the proper player, or it's broken, so there we also have some solutions for. And things like interpretation of colors. If you see that color of a car, of the car there, do you think it's A, blue, B, red, or C, neither? Who thinks it's blue? You don't see anything. Oh yeah, it's not. Oh, the lighting is terrible. Okay, now in this case, oh, so you don't see it. Okay, yeah. Because it was, but that's just an example. But then it doesn't show here very well. That in this case, the traffic light was lighting this car, so it was just a white car. But you should be careful with interpretation of data of images just by seeing those, because they might give you some incorrect information, especially in the night. Things we also do is a forensic event viewer, so combining all evidence from video, from mobile phones, and trying to put it in a timeline model and a 3D model to present it also in court and for the police. And something you also might find also in on the internet, repair of video. We also developed some software and the DeepRacer software, which you can just download it from the internet, and there you can do in a forensic proper way. At least we try to program it in that way. It's open source. You can analyze broken video and also repair it. Things we are also looking into is heat maps, like veins and heartbeats, but that's also in future biometric systems, and in some camera systems you might also use these artifacts for your identification. There it is. We also have camera identification. That's something we sometimes use also in casework. If you have your camera, you will have some kind of noise pattern, and the noise pattern can be characteristic for that CCD sensor. And that's also something we did lots of research on, how well you can identify this camera, and that appears to work quite well in certain instances. So we use it in child pornography cases, and here we see some correlation factors, so they appear to be quite high with this noise pattern from cameras from the same brand, the same model, but also the same camera, and other sensors had lower correlation, so we really could track it down to one sensor as such. We also developed some software for that, and we also improved the method by using some cheaper method to extract this pattern. So instead of a wavelet method, we used a total variation method. I won't go into detail, but in the end we'll also make a conclusion like this, that the findings are very much more likely if the seized camera took the child pornography image than if another camera took that image. So with child pornography cases, and also with database of child pornography, this can be useful, this method, because there you can compare, you can determine if a certain image has been taken by a certain camera, and also if you have a collection of images, if they belong together, if they are from the same camera. So we also did lots of work on improving this, also on databases, and we have now developed some software also in GPUs where we can compare 3,000 images. But if you compare each image with each image, you might have 4.5 million comparisons, and we also implemented that in GPUs to make it somewhat faster. We have some methods to do it for large scales, but I will just show you shortly how we do this. We extract all PRNU patterns, and then we will cluster all images, and in the end we'll have a cluster of files that belong together according to the PRNU, and then you can conclude, okay, these have to be examined further. So if you have three images from the same camera, and suddenly there you have a link with a child pornography image, this might be of value. This was shortly an overview of things that we do at the Netherlands Forensic Institute, just to give an idea. So big data analysis in forensic science is getting reality. So we have now the 8 terabytes per case, so that's something like 2,000 terabytes we have a system for. New approaches to reduce investigation time in digital evidence, repair analysis and interpretation. Of course, we try to do it with a Bayesian framework, as the other forensic experts also do. And large-scale analysis of identifiers, identities, is a thing that we are also working on. And we have some challenges, of course, like the encryption, virtualization, and amount of data, but we try to keep up with that. We have lots of R&D, and of course collaboration is also very important, also internationally, with for instance within our European network that we collaborate, but also we like to collaborate with here CCIS. We hope we can share results, and that you only have to do the R&D once. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.
Questions? Yes. I bring
you. Hi. Thank you very much for a very nice overview of your work. I've got a slightly technical question, I guess. So you got forensics, and then you got the those that are trying to obstruct your work in some way or the other. So anti-forensics, you can call it. So generally, high-energy microwaves can kind of upset microelectronics. So to what extent will a domestic microwave oven kind of upset the electronics within, say, a mobile phone? Do you have any results on that?
Yes, I have seen some research, but we didn't do the research ourselves on this kind of damage. But it very much depends on the case. I mean, if such a mobile device would have been sent in, and there is some issue, that then we would try to extract the chip still and look what we can make from it. But there might be. I mean, it's always possible to damage the chip. There's also with the passport, I think there are also some publications on that by the hacker community, that you can damage the chip in that way. So, of course, there are many ways to damage forensic evidence. But sometimes we see then that if people are really aware of that they will forget other forensic traces. But
thank you.
Thank you for a very interesting presentation. I like that you caught a number of, or helped catching a number of child pornographers. I have a question in that respect. There have been cases where there was child pornography on a computer, and then the owner claimed, no, but I visited other porn sites and that was just stored on my computer. Maybe people are a member of a botnet. Are there also tools available where you can actually prove that the owner of the computer did the actual work, instead of that it just arrived at that at some mystical way?
Yes, we see this certainly often happening, that the lawyers say, okay, yes, there has been malware on my computer, and some computers that we investigated, they had lots of malware on them. And then, it might be a possibility that this information, so it might be a real that this child pornography was on their systems. But often you will also see that there are log files that people will other log files on the computer, and they are often not manipulated by malware. I mean, then you can say, okay, we see that the person did some copy and move actions on the computer. And just based on those log files or renaming files or other kinds of things, and then you might say, okay, these collections, they are not by accident. And often with malware, you will see only a few images that are on the computer, but not complete collections of 50 million.
Thank you. Actually, two questions. The first question, the whole presentation gave me an impression a lot of technologies or method used in your work can be called from the other perspective like lawful hacking activities. In this case, I don't know if the software tools or forensic tools are open source or it is public to be easily to be accessed from public or not.
Yes, the commercial tools can be bought just by anyone often. For forensic properties, we like to have open source because also a lawyer has to verify if the method really worked and if it's really proper. I mean, in theory, they should check that. But there are some, and there is also a law on that, that there are some methods that you are not don't have to reveal because like encryption because otherwise next time it's worthless in court, so these kind of methods we will not reveal in the report, and we will say okay, we have a method known at the NFI, this has been on. But in Dutch law that's possible. There is a special law for that, or special provision for that, that you don't have to give all evidence if there is a technique which might harm future cases.
Yeah. Thank you for this answer. That actually links to my second question. 10 years ago, when we doing some media forensics, it is for example to make a judgment if a media has been tampered or not.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, we think forensics were this tamper detection method. If you compare them into cryptography tools,
mm-hmm.
Cryptography tools, we say we assume the algorithm or method should be public, and all the secrets are
mm-hmm.
Controlled by the secret key.
Mm-hmm.
But we do find a lot of tampering detection method. We really need to hide it from public.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if we use some statistical tools to get some artifacts, and then the hacker can also use similar method
mm-hmm.
to use mathematical optimization method to fake a statistics.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, it's really hard to reveal the method to the public.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a question actually general to forensic science. Do we have an approach to innovate or say invent a methodology? We can also use some secret to control the whole method. Then we can just publish the method and use the secret to control.
Yes, that's with a simple example with car in the past with another field like car theft, you also have those VIN numbers that are in the car, and then you might also have them somewhere else in the car which are not published and which will not be published in public where you find other VIN numbers. So there you have the same issue. So in that kind of regard, there was a higher court ruling where it was said, okay, you don't have to reveal this because of future cases. And that's similar to crypto cases where you have some method that you will not reveal.
Thank you.
Which is the probability of you guys make a mistake?
That's a very good question. Yes, we have some quality assurance around it, and of course people should be aware that in any kind of forensic science there always mistakes can be made. There are some statistics around it, also at DNA for instance, and then it appeared that mistakes in or errors in reporting are quite likely. I mean, maybe they are 0.1% of the reports that there is some reporting mistakes. So this is something where we always try to say, okay, Yes, that's there is some possibility that we make mistakes, and so be aware of that. We try to prevent it, of course, in our quality assurance system. And of course, if we get we also get this in from we also have to publish the number of report of errors in our report reporting. So, but it might be lower than 0.1% of the cases.
This is a follow-up question, but it's more at a higher level. I have three questions. Is the NFI certified according to ISO 27?